Welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Ramita Iyer, research analyst at the Institute. In July 2023, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi hosted the summit meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, or the SCO, for which India holds the rotating presidency this year. For more information on India's presidency, please listen to our earlier episode, number 192, with Ambassador Nirupama Rao. In this episode, we will be looking at the recently held Leaders' Summit and broader foreign policy issues. I'm pleased to be joined by Mr. Nandan Unnikrishnan, Distinguished Fellow at Observer Research Foundation, India. Mr. Unnikrishnan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So the SCO is an important Eurasian platform for India to extend its economic cooperation, especially with countries in Central Asia. Given this, India's hosting of the summit this year for the first time is being regarded as an important moment. India has also been engaging in a number of other activities to extend cooperation on both economic and defense matters. For instance, in late June, we saw Prime Minister Modi visit Washington for an official state visit, which was hailed as a trailblazing event for India-US relations. Next year, India is also set to host the summit of the Quad, or Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, a forum consisting of Australia, Japan, India, and the US, through which India hopes to further its interests in the Indo-Pacific region. What do these recent actions tell us about India's position as a continental power in Eurasia, as well as a maritime power in the Indo-Pacific? Which identity do you see as being stronger, and do you view this as diplomatic finesse or just the product of Delhi being torn between its interests?
Very sort of all-encompassing question. I mean, it really requires a long lecture on Indian foreign policy. But to try and sort of reduce it to some bullet points, I would say that India is both a continental and a maritime power. There's no doubt about it. And India's aspirations are to be a global power, and that means it requires not just continental force, but also requires to be a maritime force. But currently the point is that the most significant security challenges it faces are on the continent. The maritime challenges are yet to come. I mean, there are significant, some of them, but they are nothing compared to what challenge India faces on the continent, on its northern borders. So in that sense, I would think that the minds are focused on these security challenges, but it would be very difficult for me to say which plays a greater role, particularly given what you saw in the visit of Prime Minister Modi to the United States, the emphasis on cooperation, not just in the security area, but overall cooperation. So if India, and that is where India visualizes itself, if India is to at any level catch up or compete with China, then India has needs overall development, which cannot be purely either continental or maritime. It'll have to be development in both areas.
Just to follow up on that, so what you said is that India, in its quest to be a global power, is pursuing both a continental and maritime strategy. But how, on looking at it from the other side, how do the Quad and the SCO perceive India's diplomatic tightrope?
Well, you know, the tightrope is in our minds. If you look at it in reality, there is no tightrope, because the Quad does not exist in, let's say, the Eurasian landmass, you know, whether it's Central Asia or other regions there, which India considers its strategic neighborhood. Of course, the United States is a significant player in West Asia, but if you go east of that, then particularly after the withdrawal from Afghanistan, the United States is a power that has influence because of its overall global heft. But in terms of actually on the ground, India has to deal with different powers. And these are the Central Asian states, this is Russia, this is China and others. So in that sense, I think trying to suggest that the Quad and SCO are incompatible, you know, and is a this great tightrope act that India is doing, I don't think is entirely correct. The problem is, however, that the Western nations, which essentially represent the Quad, if you want, right, and I'm including, of course, Japan and Australia in that, they have a very sharp-edged anti-Russia policy. And that is where India falls, as it were, onto this tightrope walking stool. Because Russia and India have good relations. And that is becoming a bone of contention in India's relationship with the West. But I think for now, at least, most of the Western nations, particularly the United States, recognize that India's relationship with Russia is likely to continue for some more time, even if it is declining, but it is going to be an important relationship.
So you say that the Quad and the SCO are not incompatible, but if I were just to prod a little more on that, so there seems to be not only a difference in interests, but also a fundamental difference in values between the Quad and the SCO. So the language used within the SCO largely promotes non-interference, while we see that the Quad emphasizes the importance of democracy and openness. India seems to fall somewhere in the middle. What are your thoughts on this?
I don't think there is any country in the world that conducts foreign policy on the basis of values. So let's, again, a false comparison in my opinion. Show me the values that are pursued by the United States. And I can assure you that India has better values.
The Leaders Summit, which was hosted by India for the first time this year, as I mentioned earlier, was supposed to be held in person. But the government announced in late May that it would be a virtual meeting. Does this tell us anything about the relations between Pakistan and India or India and China?
Well, I think this tells us more about domestic politics in India. And India's developing relations with some other countries. So we, keeping in mind domestic policies as well as the relationship with a few other countries, I think India decided that it did not want to rub anyone the wrong way and therefore opted for this option, an option that we've learned to use during the pandemic. So in a sense, this is a fruit of the pandemic.
Looking at the internal dynamics of the SCO, Russia and China were perhaps equal holders within the organization, but the Ukraine conflict seems to have impacted this. Most recently, we also witnessed the revolt by the Wagner Group, a private military within Russia that challenged Kremlin's authority. Do these developments really impact the SCO, and where do Russia-China relations stand today?
You know, my view on the Wagner, I don't even call it a mutiny or insurrection. I think it was a single man's radical method of trying to save his company. I mean, his company was going to shut down on the 1st of July, and he opted for what he did. And as you saw, it did not take even 24 hours for the whole thing to fizzle out. So obviously, Wagner is unlikely to figure in discussions at SCO, particularly since most SCO leaders had expressed their support for Putin when the Wagner action was taking place. So I don't think that Wagner is a problem. Ukraine definitely is a wrinkle because I'm sure I don't have any direct evidence, but I'm confident that the Central Asian states are watching Ukraine with great care because I won't say that they are worried about Russia doing the same to them, but they are concerned about what they may perceive as Russia's kind of colonial hangover, if you want. So there are some concerns that I can understand exist in Central Asia. But at the same time, what we need to keep in mind is that while China has risen and definitely maybe at some levels challenging Russia in Central Asia, but Central Asia, Russia is still the most dominant power, whether in a security sense, whether in an economic sense, whether in a cultural sense, and that is an equally important component because many of the elites in all Central Asian countries still speak in Russian amongst themselves. You see, so Russia has links and roots in these countries, which will take, in my opinion, many decades to dissipate. So to that extent, I think Russia is relatively safe from the problems like, say, what India is facing in the G20, where India is unable to get a draft agreement between the various countries precisely because of Ukraine. But the SCO, if you noticed, the problems that India had were not around Ukraine. I mean, in terms of a host, I'm not talking of India's own problems within the SCO, but in terms of arriving at joint statements, it was not Ukraine, but rather the economic part of it, in which there were several Chinese formulations that India is not very comfortable with, and most prominent amongst them, the BRI.
Finally, looking at the composition of the SCO, apart from China and India, most countries are not broadly regarded as being economically or politically rising powers. What does this augur for the SCO and its future?
Well, actually, if you look at Central Asia, the Central Asian economies are actually growing, while the rest of the world is still struggling. I mean, the Asian countries are doing better than the rest of the world. Let's put it like that. Don't forget that in India, during the Indian Power Summit, Iran also joined the SCO. So there is one more, and there are other countries who are seeking membership. The SCO today, without its expanded membership, represents 42% of the global population. It's 24% of the global GDP, right? It also has about, I think, some 40% of, or maybe more, of natural gas and about 20-odd percent of oil, I mean crude supply. So therefore, these countries that constitute membership of the SCO are today significant components of the global economy. And therefore, they have, as a result of that, sizable heft. And don't forget, I have not mentioned the fact that they contribute to food security in the world. You cannot underestimate, for example, the uranium deposits, that if you combine Russia with the Central Asians, they are probably amongst the largest suppliers of uranium to the world. So, and given climate change considerations, nuclear power is becoming more and more important. So there are reasons why I think India is interested in the SCO, will continue to play a role there. And of course, without doubt, the fact that the SCO helps India improve its footprint in the Central Asian region is another sort of impetus for India to continue within the SCO.
Mr. Unnikrishnan, thank you for being on the podcast. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates on social media. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.